This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
John Ridley is a man of immense writing talents. As a writer, as a producer, and a director, he has credits going all the way back to The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and later the film Three Kings. He's got half a dozen novels under his belt. He's written graphic novels, a play. He's busy all the time. But since 12 Years a Slave, which he wrote, John Ridley has emerged as one of Hollywood's strongest voices on issues of race. In the past few months, he came out with Guerrilla, a fictional account of a couple in the Black Power movement of the 70s, and Let It Fall, a documentary about the Rodney King verdict. John Ridley and I spoke earlier this month, shortly after the president began talking about Charlottesville. I can't help but charge right into the politics. We will get to so many subjects, but we are now at a moment where we're just days away from the president of the United States failing to distinguish between neo-Nazis and white supremacists and their opponents. And I've got to ask you, are you surprised? Are you the opposite of surprised?
I'm stunned, because I'm not surprised that politicians use race for advantage or to separate us or to try to further their objectives. But we have gotten to a space where it had been euphemisms, it had been dog whistle, it had been light nods or the Southern strategy or things like that. But at this time, to first take a measure in coming up with some response, then take 48 hours to come up with what in 2017 to the majority of the people was the correct response. And then after 24 hours of reflection to say, you know what, there is this sliver of discord, there is this sliver of hatred, that's what I need to embrace. I don't understand that part of it.
But you use the word sliver as if it's a tiny, tiny portion of the United States that he's appealing to. Is it so tiny?
I believe it is. I really, really do. I mean, this is, again, We can never minimize, you know, hatred. It only takes one person, as we saw on that weekend, that there were a lot of people who were out there who were ready for violence, but it only took one person, you know, to put their foot on the pedal to actually cause the mayhem that cost a young woman her life, that has injured other people who are still in some degree of recovery. But, you know, you look at the Red Summer way back in the day, where there were masses of individuals who were filled with bigotry who poured through cities and killed and slaughtered, and no one would stand up against it. When the Klan could march freely down, I believe it was Pennsylvania Avenue, but some, you know, prominent promenade in Washington, D.C.
In the 20s.
In the 20s. So comparatively, yeah, this is a sliver, you know.
You wrote the great— you wrote the script for the great American film about slavery, 12 Years a Slave. And I wonder in that context how you view Trump's remark saying, look, if we're going to take down the statue to Robert E. Lee, what's next, George Washington?
Well, there is, look, I think that we do a poor job in this country educating ourselves about all aspects of it. And we do need to acknowledge that George Washington was a slave owner, and that people talk about Sally Hemings being Thomas Jefferson's mistress. but she was actually his property. You know, people have tried to bring some romance into it, but the bottom line is she was property. But I do not know how you know, other than elements of history, really equate George Washington and Thomas Jefferson to Jefferson Davis or Robert E. Lee, who wanted to truly tear this country apart. So there is, I think there's an argument for saying we need to educate ourselves on our leaders, all of them, who they were, what they stood for. You know, people talk about Woodrow Wilson and the League of Nations, but not really understand how he reinstated segregation into
Would you want Princeton University to take the name off the Woodrow Wilson School? And
you know what? That's a complicated, because I'd be more interested in, I would advocate for reevaluating Woodrow Wilson before Washington, George Washington, who owned slaves at a time when there were any number of individuals who owned slaves. But Woodrow Wilson, at a time when there were moves, not just moves, but we were removing segregation from the federal government, basically reinstated segregation, I would not have a problem with removing Woodrow Wilson's name. Woodrow Wilson, during his lifetime, made active moves to make this country a worse place for people of color.
The ABC American Crime series spent a lot of time exploring where each of its characters were coming from. So how important is this notion of empathetic storytelling in a culture that's so incredibly polarized, whether it has to do with race or so many other issues?
I think it's hugely important. I think we've got to have a sense of empathy for people, not for their necessarily their ideas and their things that they espouse. There was a gentleman on TV the other day who was an ex-neo-Nazi or white supremacist and moved away from that. And you got to believe that within these folks, you got to hope that there is some humanity somewhere that can be reached. Because if not, then are we to believe that we are going to remain in a state of constant conflict? You've got to believe that there is a space where we can hopefully reach these individuals. And
for, you believe in redemption?
The question is human nature a constant? Do we change over time, or do we become more of what we are?
Does a guy in his early 70s who's behaving the way he does as president of the United States have a shot at evolution and change for the better?
I have to believe so, because if I don't, then I have to believe that I'm doomed to not improve. My kids are. So I got to believe that people can change, and nothing would make me happier than this president, again, standing in front of people saying, you know, this is all wrong. Yes, I hope that at 70 years, 80 years, 85 years, but it needs to, you know, what I would hope for more is that it happens in the now, and not that on his 95th birthday, he looks back and goes, hey, I'm saying this now. Well, but it doesn't. It's good.
It doesn't do us any good.
Yeah, but it doesn't do us good in the here and now. You know, I mean, in all honesty, this has crossed a divide. You know, this separates us, you know, who we are as Americans with those who, and I want to be careful as I say this because, you know, intolerance is wrong. But, you know, it's, as Orrin Hatch said, you know, where do we draw the line? If we don't draw the line at Nazis, you know, who are we as Americans?
You've spent a lot of time in Hollywood, a couple of decades now. And I want to get a sense from you, if you think that Hollywood is getting any better at depicting the wholeness of the history of black experience in America, current experience of black in America, where is Hollywood in your view?
Listen, Hollywood has provided every good thing that I have professionally and to a degree personally. And there are folks out there who have supported me and taken a chance on me. I'm saying that there is a lot of good in Hollywood. Now, having said that there's a lot of good in Hollywood.
Is there enough?
I think Hollywood, you know, to this day has done a poor job of really digging into the true history of America and representation, and also being supportive of people like myself, young men and women of color, of differing backgrounds, you know, women, it's still a big deal for someone like Kathryn Bigelow to go out and make a movie that is, you know, not a romantic comedy, but a very hard-hitting film. I'm referring to Detroit. For Wonder Woman, for people to lose their minds on, oh, my God, you can make a film with a female protagonist, with a female director, and people will actually show up. You know, I mean, 2017, really, and people go, wow, oh, my God, what? We got to make more of these. Hollywood is historically, look, it part of the reason we are here, when I say here, where we are having to remove the iconography or the Confederacy, you know, the lost cause, the romanticizing of the Confederacy was aided and abetted by Hollywood and Birth of a Nation. And They Died with Their Boots On. And, of course, Gone with the Wind, you know, Song of the South. And it wove its way through politics. It wove its way through a lot of spaces, that idea that the Confederacy, there was something noble about it.
I have to say, I remember sitting in the theater and watching 12 Years a Slave in some of these unbelievable whipping scenes and thinking through tears and shock that what was happening there is that you were whipping away, not only depicting a typical punishment of slavery, but whipping away this kind of sugar-coated earlier depiction of slavery in that era.
Yeah, I would say our intention was not to necessarily be a direct antidote and say, okay, well, they did that, so we're doing this. Solomon Northup left a story that is representative of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of stories back in the day. So we didn't go into 12 Years a Slave saying, okay, well, we're going to make this so horrific because it's an antidote to Song of the South. But this was the history that was left by someone who lived through it. And it was, we needed to impart to people that however distressed you may feel coming out of it, we've shown you one story.
What's coming across your desk now? What are you working on?
Well, the things that you will likely see from me next do embrace a certain hopefulness, a sense of unity. I mean, look, the things that I have worked on over the last bunch of years, all of them have dealt with race and politics and people trying to have agency and fighting back. But for me, you know, I absolutely want to work on things right now that the hope is not so aspirational. It is there. It is underscored a little bit more.
John Ridley, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Writer and director John Ridley.